Blog Talk Radio.
This is Ray, a.k.a. Black Knight. I'm going to explain that name, Black Knight, in just a little while. On a funny note, I am a, 187 pound dude, big burly construction worker, all that. But I'm going to tell you, this show was canceled tonight, boy. I stumped my damn toe, and boy, it felt like the ground opened up and swallowed me whole. but we here. Tonight we're going to be talking about the revolution, the so-called revolution. Everybody's opinion on it. The definition of the revolution, is the revolution something that's going to be a physical fight? Is the revolution something that's going to be a mental or financial, or just everybody's different opinion on what the revolution is, and who will and will not be invited to the revolution? Because I know a lot of people, as titled revolutionaries or pro-black, you know, we all have a lot of different ideas of what pro-black and revolutionary is, and some people will not be inviting a whole lot of different other people or don't think they can contribute. I disagree with a lot of that. As in the show description, I put who will and will not be invited. Because my biggest thing is, one of my biggest things is, contrary to popular belief, the revolution will not be televised. But however, what will be televised is what we do during, before, during, how we treat one another before, during, and after the revolution. That will be televised. Okay? Let's see. We got a call on. Just a second, people. All right. Hello? We got a caller from 54 area code. You're on live.
This is Chanda.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I think, a little warrior speaks. I remember. Yeah. I remember that was, a couple of years ago you were on about the little warrior. What is it, a foundation, right? The little warrior speaks.
Well, it's my motivational business. So, workshop facilitator. I got the nickname Little Warrior from my father.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just capitalized on that and made a Little Warrior Speaks so that my voice can be heard and utilized in the community.
And you know what? I just had an episode of Deja Vu, us having this conversation way back then. You told me that, and I told you how I came up with the name Powerful Thinking. And since I was a little boy, he asked my grandmother something, and she always said, "I don't know, baby. Let grandma do some powerful thinking on it." That's how powerful thinking came about. So, how you been?
I've been good. It's really busy, and I didn't know I would get as busy as I have since announcing just Saturday I was running for city council. And so it's been crazy.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you that. So you're running for city council, where at?
I'm in Waynesboro, Virginia.
Okay, all right. So I guess that's definitely a big thing, a big deal out there.
It is. It's city council has been all white for probably 40, 50 years. I mean, there has not been anyone black until we've had we had one council man probably, I think they said 30 years ago. And then a lady that helped to campaign for her particular ward in the last election last year, she is the first female black woman, but she's the first in a very, very long time. And so city council, the leadership has looked all white males for the last 20 years, probably.
So let me ask you, especially being a woman, what type of impact do you think that have on young black women and young black girls, females out there in that district?
Well, I believe that there will be, in anything we do, when we can see people that look like us in leadership, we know that there's a change and a difference that can come. We know that there's an ability that we have within us to do whatever that we're doing or we want to do. So it gives them aspiration of where they will want to be one day because they see people in that position. I have always, if you know this area is very, very racist. And so it's very racist. And it always has been. This is my home. You know, I was born and raised here. And I'm not saying the whole, you know, everybody is racist. I'm not saying that. But we deal with a heavy racism in the area. So we're about 30 minutes from Charlottesville, west of Charlottesville. And mm-hmm. we're about 15 minutes from Stanton and 40 minutes from Harrisonburg, JMU. So we sit smack dab in the middle of the Shenandoah Valley. Of Virginia. So we have not had professional black people, you know, at a vast majority of professional black folks that are in the community. So even with my career in the financial industry of being in banking, people have been, you know, that has been huge for young people to walk in the bank and see the branch manager that runs the whole bank.
Impactful
to them.
You being in banking actually is one direction. I'm sure this conversation is going to end up going. So I'm actually glad that you are in banking. But speaking on what you said about as far as seeing, you know, someone that looks like, you know, them seeing someone that looks like us. In that field, you know, it gives them aspirations and, hey, you know, make them think, hey, I can do that. Because my uncle Mike, that's my guy. And when he's 65, and when he was a kid, one thing, like, he loves what I do. I'm a construction superintendent. He loves what I do. And he always, when he was a kid, he never knew that blacks could do could be electricians, because all he mm-hmm. ever seen was white guys. And the first time mm-hmm. he seen somebody, a black electrician, it just like it blew his mind. mm-hmm. And that story is always funny to me. And, you know, I know it to be true because, you know, I used to do underwater welding, and we used to go around and
right.
we put anti-corrosion systems on docks and piers for like Hess, Chevron, stuff like that, and mm-hmm. at their refineries. And we would go to these places, like, way out. And it was me and a friend of mine who actually got me the job. And we were always the only black guys that we would see, always. And it was even up in Connecticut, the Navy builds their submarines up in Connecticut. And we would go there, and we were putting anti-corrosion systems on those docks. And during the day, because, of course, the government's objective is not to make money. They just spend. So during the day, everybody would be walking around. It's just like, you know, only until they started talking about government cutbacks is when, you know, everybody was actually working. But, I mean, it would look like downtown Newark, or a lot of people might not be familiar with that. It would look like 42nd Street in New York, just packed with people. And I'm telling you, to see, you could sit out there for an hour and a half, 2 hours before you've seen another black face walk by. And
wow.
There was, you know, plenty of blacks, like, in the Navy, the armed services and all that, but actually building the subs, nah, it wasn't
mm-hmm.
a lot.
No.
It definitely wasn't a lot.
I know exactly.
Yeah, I knew exactly what you're talking about, you know, as far as that. Wait a minute. Okay, so did you have a chance to read what the topic of the show was tonight?
No, I didn't.
right.
I heard the topic of the show was.
Yeah, the revolution. Now, I'm actually glad because I was kind of worried, you know, with you running for office and everything. I didn't know if you was going to come on and, you know, be held back. But, you know, you started talking about, you know, the racist thing and all that. I was like, okay, good, she all right.
No. I'm going to be true to myself. I'm not going to, I had someone to talk to me about talking about Trump on my page and, you know, because I'm running for office. I'm not going to change my view about Trump. So, me changing what I'm talking about on my page about Trump is just going to be me being fake. That's not me. Never has been, never will be.
Just check it. The topic of the show is the revolution. And it's pretty much geared towards, like, you know, this whole pro black movement and black love and all that type of stuff. Which I'm like one of the most pro black people you will ever meet. Do I have problems with other pro-black people? Yes. And, yeah, they definitely have a problem with me. I am really, really, really hoping one guy calls in tonight. He has called me a coon on Facebook. But I am told he refuses to come on. Yeah, his opinion is he don't want to come on the radio and argue over what he believes in. But it's not an argument because, hey, you might actually teach me something, you know? So that's why I really hope that he will call in. But the whole thing is, as far as, you know, the pro-black, as with me and the pro-black, is the fact that, you know, are we inviting everybody to this fight? When you hear the revolution, like I know growing up, you know, it was, you know, the revolution will be televised and all of that. So let me ask you, what is your definition or idea of what this revolution would be? Would it be like a fight or meeting of the minds, financial? You know, what's your definition of the revolution?
I believe it's all encompassing, but I do believe that if we're going to have a true revolution, the mind has to be changed. And so we have black folks that are their own worst enemies. You know, we do not want to respect. We do not want to respect the intelligence of other black people. We don't want to respect what resources other black people can provide to us. We don't want to respect the advice that is given from other black people. We have gotten away from sitting underneath of Big Mama and intelligent older black men that have been there, done that. We have no reverence of our lives. You know, we are so caught up in a pop culture that we cannot get out of our own way. And when we have leadership such as mine that I'm doing, where I'm having community, I'm bringing community meetings, and I'm having, I don't know if you saw that on my Facebook page, but I'm bringing the community together. And so we're sitting at the table having conversations. I've got about 50 people there, and 5 of them are black, if I have 5. So you can't ask white people to have a revolution for black people, and black people ain't even there. And we constantly are waiting for somebody else to do something for us. And, you know, black folk don't, you know, they don't care for that kind of conversation, but it's true. You will go and spend $150 on a pair of shoes for your son, and he can't even speak the English language correctly. He can't articulate his words. See, if you're not, we're going through a revolution, but you're not preparing your children for a revolution. We got young minds that are gifted, talented, can, you know, do things, and we got them in front of a PlayStation and letting them have the newest game and the newest clothes and all this other mess, but we're not putting anything into our minds of our children. So,
yeah, see, because
you know,
back in Big Mama day, you know, like me, I'm 43, God willing to be 44 in December. you know, when I was, you know, these kids' age and all, you know, we didn't have, like, I think we had, like, Vectrex and Atari.
Yeah.
That was it.
Atari.
But even
right.
then, but even then, you know, mommy wasn't, you know, you weren't about to sit up in the house all day on Saturday.
Yeah,
she
outside.
Done worked. She, yeah. She done worked
yeah,
all week
outside.
And all that. Yeah.
yeah.
Saturday and Sunday, that was her time. You going outside, you're not sitting in the house. Watching, you know,
no
playing
play.
Games and watching TV.
Yeah.
You know, she let you watch your Saturday morning cartoons. But, yeah, after that went off, well, you got to go. But
you
now,
go.
You know,
you
we live in
go
the age of social media, video games, and, you know, the TV is the babysitter age. That You know, that's
yeah.
what we're
yeah.
living in now. So, and we do, as far as this revolution thing, you know, we do have to come out of that. Definitely.
Yes.
We have to come
we got
out
to.
Of that.
We got to turn off the TV and give our kids a book. We got
yeah,
to get our black children are not even able to read. You know, they
mm-hmm.
can't even get to the, you know, to the eighth grade. They can't, they can barely read. So probably when I talked to you, my son was probably really young, but my son
mm-hmm.
is 12 now. And my
mm-hmm.
son can stand in front of a, you know, a whole room of people and have a, you know, articulate, have a conversation, do a speech, I mean, whatever he needs to do because he's been trained that way
yeah.
since he was a baby.
Yeah.
He sat in front of a TV and watched speeches by Malcolm X and Martin Luther King and Marcus Garvey. We look
mm-hmm.
at all that and I show him black men. I show him black athletes who know how to speak and how to articulate their words. Shaquille, do not ever go on a television to do an interview, and you can't speak like this man right here, okay? Because
mm-hmm.
you're going to have
yeah.
a problem with your mother. You know, don't go, yeah, what's up? That's not the kind of interview that you are going to be doing. So we have
mm-hmm.
to practice that with our children. We got to put them in position to be able to do that. We have lost, we talking about a revolution, we have lost the direction for our children. We are letting everybody else direct our children. Except
because right
us.
Now, the one thing that we have to know and accept is that right now, the bottom line, like if the revolution started sometime soon on whatever platform, whether it be a physical one, but like you said, it'll be all encompassing. The thing is this, those kids that you and I are talking about right now, those are the ones that's going to end up, you know, bringing it out to the end. And if that's
yes,
the right. case right now, as it stands, guess who loses the revolution? Like it's sad, but it's true. Because if these kids
but you
are
don't
not
you, you don't
taught.
Think the revolution has already started though?
That's something I think about all the time. I mean, if that is the case, that the revolution has been going on since what? Hell, slavery. And if it is again,
you know,
once again,
time,
in this day and age, we're losing. The revolution is going on right now. We're losing.
Okay,
that's for
so
sure.
Listen, the reason why I say this, that I believe the revolution is going on right now, because let me tell you what we're doing. We're missing the revolution because we're not paying attention. The revolution,
mm-hmm.
in my mind, really began, for me, and I'm not saying anybody else, because I don't know what other people think. But I've been on a mission ever since this happened. And I know that there's other black men that have been killed. I'm not saying that. But
mm-hmm.
when I saw Trayvon Martin
mm-hmm.
and he was killed, and then I followed trial. I watched that trial on TV, and I watched that. And I watched them say that man wasn't guilty. The revolution
mm-hmm.
started for me that day. I haven't felt my heart hurt inside my chest like that in all my life. And I've lost my father, and I didn't feel that kind of hurt. That this young boy, life didn't matter to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
That they would allow judicial system to let this bastard off. I couldn't imagine in my mind that being my son, because we wouldn't be on the phone. If he was walking around after that court trial, he wouldn't be breathing right now. I can guarantee you that. You're going to take my son that I gave birth to and raised to whatever Trayvon's age was, and you're going to take it upon yourself to say he don't belong here in this neighborhood, so you're going to kill him.
So, you know what, on that note, would you saying that, let me ask you this question here. You remember the riots in Baltimore? I'm sure you heard of it, where there was a young black man out there. He was protesting, and his mother saw him out there, snatched him up, and beat him all the way home. did you hear about that?
Okay. I saw it.
Well, the whole...
I saw it.
Mm-hmm. So you know, there's a lot of controversy about that amongst blacks, saying that, oh, she wrong, and she defending the white man, this and that, and, oh, she shouldn't do that. She should let him protest and stand up for black rights and all of this. That being your son, would you have reacted the same way, or would you have been proud that he was out there protesting? But before you answer that, let me get to this caller here. I have a caller online.
Okay.
Hold on. Hello, we got a caller from 862-621. Hello. Hello. We're going to mute him for a second.
Okay.
Hello.
How much?
Yeah, we're going to mute him. Yeah. Hello.
Hello. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay, yeah, we're gonna mute him for a second. But so would you react the same way? Yeah,
absolutely.
Would you react the same way, or would you have been proud your son was out there standing up for his rights?
No. I support that woman. Let me tell you why.
Mm-hmm.
We gotta stop as black folk reacting to shit.
Mm-hmm.
Stop. Can't let anger go down there, go down the street, want to be looting or whatever. He was saying, you can't have a revolution. You can't change your environment. You can't change anything, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
You got to
listen.
We are smart people. Use your intelligence. You understand what I'm saying? You don't respond in that way, going on national TV, and they got all this stuff down there going on, and you on national TV doing your stuff. Well, they're going to either lock you up or kill you. So what good is that? What did you change? We got to use our mind. We got to be thinkers.
Well, let me say, I don't think the protests shouldn't have happened or anything like that. I think, you know, when things like that happen, you know, we do have to do things to, you know, make our voice heard and people, you know, take notice. My only problem with protests is when, okay, it's a mob of us, we protest and we stand up for our rights, and as we going down, you know, you set the next black man's car on fire. Or,
right,
you know, the store,
right,
the stores in your neighborhood where you buy tissue, milk, water, hell, 9 liters or whatever else, we burn those stores down. The problem with that for me is, and yeah, okay, yeah, we burnt the store down and people took notice and, you know, okay, they seen it. The problem with that is when they fix that store up, the money that they spend fixing that store up, that 89-cent roll of toilet paper is now $1.29. Because where do you think the money for fixing the store up is going to come from? And that is my problem with, you know, protests. And I'm not saying, you know, hey, it should be, you know, kumbaya, we shall overcome, quiet protest. But, you know, we have, you know, they got the police out there. If you're out there protesting, hey, protesters, you know, they're not afraid to go to jail. Like, you know, you want to make a point, you stand against the most likely racist police out there. You know, so if you want to make some noise, okay, but go ahead.
But, you know, I said this in my community meeting. We got to be where we need to be before that even happens.
Mm-hmm.
See, if the police is the issue, then we got to get to know the police and they got to get to know us. Because
mm-hmm.
what I believe is, if my son, because I'm not going to tell you what my son going to do because we don't know what our children going to do. But if my son was doing something wrong and he's running away or they catching out, whatever the case is, if the policeman knows my son, they going to say, oh, hey, kill. They will think twice before they kill him because they know him.
Mm-hmm.
They, now, not to say he won't get killed,
well,
I can't say that. But
well, that depends on the police and his attitude. And I mean, because I'm going to be honest with you. Coming from Newark, you know, I came up a certain way. And hell, the police that knew us, knew our mama the whole nine, they still kicked our behinds. I mean, we were doing all kinds of stuff. But they damn sure ain't think twice about beating the hell out of us, that's for sure. It depends on that person, their attitude, and you know what they're about.
We don't have that here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna tell you, we don't have that.
You don't have what?
I know police. We don't have that issue where police are harassing kids or mistreating kids at this point. And I don't want it to happen. I don't want it to start. You know,
well, that's why
we
need sisters like you on the city council.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And so, let me see if this caller is ready. Let me see.
Okay.
Hello.
Hello.
862-621. How you doing?
You're on
there with Powerful Thinker. We good. How you doing? What's your name?
Carl.
Hey, Carl, how you doing? All right, so we on there. We got Shandon on there. She is running for city councilwoman, correct?
Yep.
And,
okay,
and what town again? Oh, okay, good. So you caught up and you know where we are. Okay, yeah, she's
yeah,
running for
yeah.
city council on Waynesboro, I'm saying, so you know where we are. So based on what you've been listening to, any opinions on what you heard?
As far as the revolution,
mm-hmm.
I guess from my point of view, we need to define what is revolution or what does it mean.
And now,
exactly,
and so,
I think
and
we
and
all got
one
different
of the questions. Yeah, that's one of the questions I'm asking callers tonight. What's your definition of the revolution? You, Carl, your definition of the
me,
revolution.
Oh, my definition of revolution is
yeah.
within yourself, because that's what you got pretty much 100% control of. You
mm-hmm.
decide within yourself what you're going to accept, what you're not going to accept, and then you act that out. If you decide that you're going to buy black, that's what you do. If you decide that you're going to, like one of the examples you gave with the riots and they tore down stuff. Well, like they tore down stuff. They didn't tear down nothing they own. But after you tear it down, you got to be in a position to build a new one yourself. And they don't come back. Or if they do
exactly.
come back, you don't support them.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But that revolution
yeah.
I think it's an internal, and you have to make a decision for yourself, and then it coagulates when everybody makes that decision that they're going to, you know what I mean, not
yeah, but if you
in the matrix.
Okay, so if you have a group of 10 friends, and, you know, you take your definition of the revolution, which is to, you know, work within self, I mean, you know, you start getting your stuff together, and you're not going to buy black, it's not, do you... How does that help your other 9 friends? Do you not push it on them? Because one thing I've definitely learned, somehow a lot of us, we get in this thing where like, oh man, I don't want to hear that, and, you know, all of that. So how do you get your friends on board or other people, period? Or do you just like leave it at working on yourself and the hell with everybody else?
Well, it's a working on yourself, and by default, your friends are going to see something in you that's a little different. And they're probably going to ask you, like, what's going on? Why are you not participating? Why you don't watch TV anymore? Why, you know what I mean? In the conversation. And then you'll explain it. And, you know, and then people, they hear you, but then after they hear you, they watch you. And
now this is
if it's real, and eventually they may get it and may start participating, or they may not. But that's irrelevant to you. You just do what you're doing, and like-minded people will coagulate, and then that's what basically will happen.
So if if no one around you catches on and, you know, comes on board, what do you do then to get it out?
Well, you're not responsible for getting anybody else out. You're responsible for you and expressing yourself, and the results will be the results. That's one thing I learned, that you're not responsible.
Yeah, but you can't have a
results.
Revolution by yourself, though. You can't, like, you know, even
yeah,
if
that,
you,
that's why we
if
have
you
to
get out
revolution.
And you get right. Yeah, but if you get out and, you know, get yourself right and everything, it's still a matter of, you know, we all have to be a part of this. And I think that's part of the problem where, you know, a lot of people is like, you know what, well, I'm going to worry about me, and I'm going to, you know, I'm going to get out, and, you know, I ain't worried about nobody else. I think that's actually, that's part of the problem.
Well,
like you said, you're not responsible for anyone else.
That's where you got to redefine revolution. A revolution is an internal thing. It's not external. It reflects, it expresses itself externally, but it starts internally, what you will do and what you will accept and what you will not accept.
Mm-hmm. I guess that's Shandon. What do you think?
Well,
Shandon.
I'm here.
Go ahead.
Hello? Okay.
Yes.
Like I've been telling them, community meetings, you set the table and they will come. And whoever comes to the table, that's who you work with. We are so big trying to have a revolution with mass numbers of people. When it's got to change one person at a time. That's why, you know, like the other caller calls saying, if I change me and you change you and he change him, and the revolution is continued one at a time, and then we come together having a conversation, there's three of us right here. And three of us
exactly.
got another friend or two friends that we, the next time we come to the table, we going to bring them. And then after that, they're going to bring somebody else, and then eventually you're going to have that. But when you first walk into a room and you only have 10 people that showed up, you can't waste your time upset who is not at the table. You got to
waiting on 10 other people to show up.
That's
exactly.
right. You got to deal with who is at the table. Because a revolution, when you want to effectively lead people, you got to use who you have, and use what's already in them to get to the next level and the next change. And once they
start,
see
you
changing or 10 people changing, they don't say, wait a minute, I'm going to go over there because all 10 of them got together 6 months ago, and look where they at right now. So I'm going to go over and see what they're doing over there. You see what I'm saying? That's how you move a revolution.
Mm-hmm. Okay, question. All right, one of the things with the so-called, Carl, I think you're going to have to let your window up or something. We're getting some noise on your end.
All right, let me go in the building. I was sitting in the car with the windows down, but Carl's riding by.
Okay. So, you know, one thing about this, you know, the so-called revolutionaries, where they do this thing where, you know, some people, like, you know, some pro-black people are just, like, you know, dead in there. I mean, they in there. Where it's like, you know, they don't wanna do, or they have a problem with blacks that believe in Christianity, Islam. Carl, could you mute your phone, please?
Okay.
So, you know, they have a problem with people that believe in Christianity, Islam, or religion as a whole. Or they have a problem with homosexuals or people that date outside their race, especially white people. Like black men with white women and black women with white men. Me personally, the whole interracial dating thing, yeah, it don't really make me a huge difference. I mean, I'll be honest. At the same time, you know, would I ever take a white woman home to my mama? No. yeah, definitely not. homosexuality, don't condone that at all. But at the same time, you know, I'm not going to say, hey, this gay banker over here, you know, because it's part of the revolution will be financial, all right? And like it is right now, which is one of the things I told you earlier, Shannon, that that's going to something that's going to come up later in the discussion. I'm not going to say, you know, these 4 million bankers that can teach our people financial literacy, you know, through this revolution, hey, we not dealing with them and we don't like them because they gay. Well, okay, so who's going to, you know, the other 3 million people that can teach financial literacy, hey, they can't take care of everybody. So, yeah, guess what? Whether we like, you know, homosexuality or not, we need those 4 million brothers and sisters that can teach us that. You know, for me, I'm not willing to exclude anybody from the revolution. Doesn't make sense. Like I said, you got a lot of people out there based on people's who they love, whether it be gay, lesbian, black, white, you know, outside of the black race period, where they just don't think they offer or can offer anything. If a black man dates a white woman and his mother is white, it said, like, how can he know anything about the black struggle? Because bottom line, he's still black, and not only is he black, he's a biracial product, and hell, in some cases, they have it even worse because they're not white enough for the whites and they're not black enough for the blacks, so they catch it on, you know, both ends. But just because, you know, they date outside that race or that one of their parents is white, how can you say that, you know, they don't know about the struggle? You know?
My original thing is that black people are getting in the way of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care who you sleep with. I don't care what your background is. I don't care where you came from. If you got the resources to help me, I'm going to sit down and listen to you. Because the thing about it is we live in our community. We live, all of these people that you just described are all in our community. They're all there. And we are all part of the human race, and we can't exclude certain human beings because of we don't agree or whatever the case is. You know, if I'm a Christian, okay, and I know what the Bible says about homosexuality, I know what the Bible says about premarital sex, I know what the Bible says about parenting, I know what the Bible says, I know the word, you know, all through and through. But there's one common theme in the Word of God. And any religion I've ever studied, Islam, Jewish, faith, Catholic, there's one word that is in every one of those religions, and that's love. My first thing is I got to love you. I got to love you right where you are. I've got to be accepting of who you are right where you are. And I can't tell you, you're going straight to hell, and I'm not going to say that, you're going straight to hell because you're a homosexual. You're going to go straight to hell because, you know, you're living with a man. I'm not going to tell you that. What I'm going to first tell you is that I love you, and what do you want to talk to me about? And I'll try my best to direct you down that path. That's all I can do. And I don't feel like the revolution is going to be filled with all the people you just described. We all going to be in it.
Mm-hmm.
If we want to contribute and we want to see change, we all going to be in it. And I've got to respect you. You know, atheists come around. People with the Confederate flag in my area, that's a big bone of contention. We see Confederate flags every day.
Wow.
And they keep calling about heritage, not hate.
Mm-hmm.
Heritage,
wow.
Not hate. And
so, Carl,
you live with that.
Yeah, I'm here.
Wow. So what do you think on that?
on give me
as far as excluding or, based on race, color, creed, you know, whatever. Everybody is needed on this thing.
Okay, everybody's needed because who they are is they basically, from my point of view, is their independent decision to live their life. And that has nothing to do with how I live my life. But what we come together at is on our common ground. And that's what we build on, what we have in common. And then once that's done, you may go left, I may go right, go about our business, but we still respect each other and know that we do have some of the same interests, and we work around that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, because I know a few pro-black brothers that, or people, period, that, you know, homosexuality is the worst thing in the world. And then even right now, like as I keep saying that, I'm about to make sure I reiterate that, no, I do not condone that. See, but I said it once, I shouldn't have to keep saying it. But, you know, these brothers, like, you know, homosexuality is the worst thing in the world. You know, but at the same time, would love their woman to invite another woman in their bed. you can't have it both ways. You know, it's you hate it or you don't. You know, you can't be, you know, inviting women into your bed and then say, hey, we going to have this revolution and, you know, it's just not, you know, we just not going to deal with them. Because the bottom line, like I always say, contrary to popular belief, the revolution will not be televised, all right? I was saying that to Shanda earlier that, you know, because, you know, growing up, you know, that's, you know, a lot of us, you know, it was always the revolution will be televised. Actually, how we treat each other before and after, that's what's going to be televised. Yeah, not the actual revolution, because however we're acting, if we're acting a fool and things like that, you know, those are the things they always show of us. They don't show the black women running for city council. You know, they don't show. Like, Carl, what do you do?
I run a shop. I sell cars and service. Car sales and service.
Yeah, see, and ain't nobody beating down your door with the cameras talking about how, you know, whatever life you may have come from or whatever, you know, this young man, he's an inspiration to young black men now. That nobody's beating down your door with cameras to show that, are they?
No. I have a clear understanding of, you know, what they decide to put on their media. You know what I mean? Versus what's really going on. My father
was
in town.
That's why we need our media.
Right, exactly. It just gives us more examples. We need to do our own thing and stop.
That's right.
This integration thing kind of threw us for a loop. We need to get back to as we were when we were independent. And we can bring, you can come over on our terms. You know what I mean? Now, if I go over there, I'm going over there on my terms. Other than that, we have to have our individual, our
right.
culture, our the way we do things, this is how we operate. And if you want to operate with us, you're going to operate on these terms. But that's all they did to us. They invited us over, but on their terms. You know? We gave up all our independent stuff and went to join theirs. And they didn't balance it out and say, okay, we share. And they just said, okay, you can come over here and you can do it. We're going to do it this way. And it's fine. You can have yours. I'm about to create mine now.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's good. And it's such a slight, like you said, their media, because we are so much more than what their media shows. Definitely, way so much more. And
but we gotta stop We gotta stop going on their media like that. That's we gotta reach them to keep going there. We got an NAACP president up here, which I don't have any deals with him, but the NAACP president thinks that he can publicly speak. And he probably has a ninth grade education. Listen, man, shut up. I mean, get somebody that can articulate what you need to get out, and that's the only person that's interviewed by the media. Stop, because that is the image you are putting out. that black people are ignorant, slow, they're not intelligent. I mean, that's the image you're putting out. You got to know what your limitations are. You won't see me go on a show talking about being a doctor or somebody's body because that's not my gift. That's not my knowledge. Mm-hmm. You know? So,
well, yeah, they're always going to go to they're always going to go to the person that's, you know, obvious, like definitely, you know, that's going to be, you know, the embarrassment. You know, I mean, because in most cases, you know, it is obvious. You know, okay, we're going to pick this guy. We're not going to pick the guy over there with the work boots on, the tool belt, and his work ID hanging from his neck, because this guy may actually be able to contribute something. You know, they're not going to pick that. They're going to pick the person where you look at his or her hands and the tips of their fingers are burnt and their lips are, and you know what's going on with them. I mean, you've seen the news. And, you know, that's always what happens, always, you know.
Yeah.
But now at the same time, that person who can articulate what, you know, what needs to be said, or, you know, they also have an opportunity to, hey, let me stop at the camera and say something because they know what's going on, you know. But
right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
They keep going.
Because it's none of their business. Yeah.
You have another caller. Hold on, guys. Hello, 904-629. You're on the air. Okay, we're going to mute them until they come in or they might
just
be on
listening.
Guys,
I'm going to have to jump off of here.
Okay,
Shannon. I got another conference call I got to get ready for. All
right.
Now
you
but, you know, hit me up. I'll be glad to jump on with you anytime.
You make sure you win that seat out there.
Oh,
and you let and you let us know that you win that seat. All right.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Okay,
thank you for calling.
Talk to y'all later. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Now, Carl, I wanted to ask you about what the channel was talking about earlier. Is what was it? Oh, as far as the as far as financial literacy, which is seems to be one of our like biggest problems. Where, you know, a lot of us just aren't financially literate, which is
right.
based on several things. One, you know, we might have came up, you know, watching our parents, you know, live paycheck to paycheck or whatever the case may be. So we were pretty much raised like that. So that's what we see. Now, a lot of people, you know, they put that off on the fact that, you know, that's all they knew growing up. You know, that's all they ever seen. But at the same time, me and a friend of mine was talking earlier, and, you know, that it's okay to know that and, you know, that be a reason why, you know, you are the way that you are. But at the same time, you see people around you that, you know, don't live like that or don't have to live like that or that may have at one point did live like that and they came out of it. So at some point, you have to sit down and say, hey, I don't have to live like this. And, like, it is, like, such a shame how, something I didn't know. I've been working on my credit scores lately, which are, like, great now. So, but, you know, I checked my credit score last week or so and realized that my scores had dropped. Like, I don't know, 12, 13 points or whatever. And I was furious, man. I was furious. And so I clicked into it and I read further on and it told me that it had dropped because they had raised the limit on my credit card. So I was upset.
Yeah.
Like, man, if that's the case, if that's going to do that, just, you know, notify me first and, you know, let me make that decision. I was upset. But what I didn't know was, although the score itself dropped, the credit rating didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, because I didn't know that, I was furious.
Right, because all we were basically taught, without doing no deeper research, just surface stuff, is credit score.
mm-hmm. without the whole, you know, the whole process of what does that really mean? You know what mm-hmm. I mean? And how does it come about and how does it really work? And, you know, that's
like
not part of our...
Definitely not part of our makeup, but it can be.
We
can break out of that.
Yeah, because part of our problem is we given too much control. We got too much trust for things outside of ourselves.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh,
we trust
definitely.
The school system. We trust this. It's basically, it comes on TV, we believe it. So the news mm-hmm. say it's true. And mm-hmm. that's what we got to get away from and get back to our own intelligence and be like, well, you know, school took all the arts out of school. And
mm-hmm.
all we really have known is being indoctrinated. And they teach
yeah.
you what they want you to know. Just mm-hmm. this is all you need to live in this system. You know what I mean? You don't need to know because basically we're designed to be consumers.
So
you don't need to know
then,
about your credit.
Yeah. Yeah, because I definitely didn't know that. But at the same time, okay, so they're teaching us what they want us to know and all of that. So at what point as parents do we sit down and start to teach what they need to know?
Exactly. That's where that revolution starts, where you have to start making changes. And if eventually, like she said, that group of 10 people, we start homeschooling
mm-hmm.
and, we, you know, they go to their school to get the indoctrination. And then you come to our school to put it in its proper context. How do you
mm-hmm.
manipulate the systems in your best interest? You know
mm-hmm.
what I mean? And that's
let
where the homeschooling, that's where the community centers, where this is where you teach the stuff that we know they're not teaching in school. Matter of fact, first, from my point of view, you can take them out of school.
You can take them out of school.
Yeah. Because at the end of the day,
homeschooling.
I never produced my high school diploma for anything. So you know what I mean? You got to graduate high school, get your diploma, and nobody ever asked to see it, and nothing I did except for one. I did like a 100 things, and one of them I needed my this proof of my high school diploma, and that was for when I joined the military. They wanted to see that I graduated high school. Anything
yeah.
else I did, never produced it.
Never. One time. The whole time since
not
you
one.
Had it. Do you even know where
it is? It's in North Carolina. Been down there since 1990.
Yeah. No need for it to be here.
Yeah.
So, and that's something we were talking about earlier, too, as far as, you know, with the kids now, it's just we're in an age of social media and
mm-hmm.
Video games and all of that. I made a joke earlier about, I think what we had, like, Vectrex and Atari, and it was it was just different. Black parenting was way different. It was
right,
like,
the culture was different.
You know.
Coming
yeah,
from the grandparents and from, actually, we come out of the 60s of independence.
Mm-hmm.
And we was great
exactly.
in the 60s, but, you know, we was doing too great in the 60s, so they had to throw a monkey wrench in that game.
They had to slow it down.
Took all our leaders and dumped a bunch of drugs in the community.
Well, now,
because it's documented, the CIA, you know, in the '80s bought cocaine in.
Well, yeah.
So I think the
seventies
was heroin. Yeah.
Yeah. That's not just, you know, rumor. That's actual fact.
Yeah, that's documented. Yeah.
That's actual fact that happened and, you know, can be proven. But it's like, you know, I come from
a big level of sabotage in the middle of our own dysfunction that we still dealing with. It's a lady called Dr. Joy DeGruy, and she has a thing called post-traumatic slave syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And by the definition of post-traumatic stress syndrome, that's us times 10, because
mm-hmm.
it's been generation and generation of this trauma that has never been addressed. So we
okay,
still
wait,
doing things. Yeah, go ahead.
Let me stop you right there, though. I agree with that. But this is where, you know, the pro-black guys start to call me coon. Because I agree with all of that. But at the same time,
Hold on one second. Okay.
Because, right,
I'm
you learn. When you walk together in that greatest
right.
we
walk in the drop box. All right. Hello?
If if we learn, we don't have to, you know, come from that. There's a picture that was going around the internet where, let me see, it was the black lawyer, the defendant, and the black sheriff, okay, at the defendant table. And to me, right. What that showed was, post-traumatic slave syndrome and all of that. But what that showed me right there was that we can make choices. We don't have to be. And then me speaking from, I come from a lot. I ain't afraid to say, you know, I done did the street thing, you know, all of that. And, I come from, right now, to be honest, here on the show, right now, if I lost my job, couldn't find another one or, get anything going, unfortunately, one thing, I know there's always one thing I can do that's going to, I'm going to make money and I'm going to be okay. Sad part is, that's not the only thing, but that's the thing I know right away that can happen. All right, so there is, there is choices. We can make choices. We don't have to sit down and say, okay, post-traumatic slave syndrome, that's why I can't do nothing or I can't get anything better and all of that. That's just not true. It's not true.
We, as a collective, but you're always going to have these exceptions to the norm, but when you look as a collective, as a group, what happened to a group, and why this group is still, relatively dysfunctional. That part plays. You always see some people that's going to come out of it and, have a better interpretation of things than others. But some of the stuff we do that is unconscious, Once upon a time, our grandparents put all their belongings in a mattress. They monies and stuff that was important to them, especially money. Yeah. They didn't mess with banks. But they had an experience that we didn't have.
Hence the no financial literacy.
right. Because once upon a time, banks closed and they just closed the door and people was like, what's going on? And they just lost everything. So they was like, we ain't doing that again. So now, generations go by. That's not the experience, but our grandparents had the experience. So we like, why don't you put the money in the bank? And we put that money in the bank. And not that it hasn't, well, it has happened because the financial situation of 2008 pretty much wiped everybody out. So it happened.
I know people right now still talking about how they don't trust banks and they don't put their money in the bank. And it's 2017. I'm not putting my money
really,
in there.
When we say that, at the end of the day, nothing really changed. You know what I mean? You see things happen, and you're like, damn. Now, that don't happen no more. Like, no, that everything, nothing changed, except the date and the way things appear to be. But at the fundamental root of things, at the institutional level of everything in the United States, it hasn't changed from when its first inception.
Yeah, one thing I definitely hate to hear is that, I mean, maybe I'm saying this wrong, but that whole post-traumatic slave syndrome thing, like we just can't, get past that, or we can't do anything because that exists. Not saying it doesn't exist, because it does, but it just does not mean we cannot do anything. That this is the reason why we can't do anything. Because that is 100% not true.
That's the elephant in the room. And then you have the institutional systems that set up a certain way. For example, the police force. If you knew the history of the police force, they were protecting the property. Now, the other half of that is, guess what else was property?
We were.
Our ancestors.
Definitely.
So at its root, nothing changed.
This is true. That's a good point. But I don't like to hear the whole oppressor. They have us so oppressed that, now, don't get me wrong, I know, because there's a whole lot. Like, I can give an example of when I used to work this job, PCA engineering, and on the weekends we would get paid, and by the time we got back to Jersey, you know, banks closed. So we had a friend that could cash our checks, and it was you know, we just sign it over to him. Now my Uncle Mike loves to tell this story. Where how, you know, for years and years and years, you know, that was something that was very, you know, acceptable. It was legal, everything. And, you know, sometimes, like my Uncle Mike tell it, like, you know, sometimes it'll be 20 names on the back of a check. It was pretty much currency. Mm-hmm. You sign in and you pass it to this person. Now,
right.
I know no sooner as black folks caught on to that, you can no longer do that in the bank. I know here you can. You can no longer just sign over a check to somebody. And it was, you know, soon as, you know, black folks, you know, found out about that. Same thing, you know, my opinion as far as when black folks realized that, hey, we can buy houses, because, you know, we were all renters, like, forever. So black folks, you know, find out, you know, if you look right around, like, the recession, that's around a year, two, 3 years before that. That's when black folks found out, hell, we can buy houses. We can own this. We can own where we live at. We don't have to keep paying out to somebody else. And we started buying houses. And, again, part of that problem was we weren't 100% educated on that. So the predatory loans came in, all kinds of shady deals, you know, houses in the middle of a war zone. Okay, it was brand-new construction, but they're in the middle of a war zone selling for $350,000 with inflatable mortgages and interest-only loans. Because we didn't know. It's that what they told us, what they told us about those loans and everything and those prices, we trusted it, like you said earlier. We trusted it and we went with it because, hey, this person must know what they're talking about. And look what happened. Yeah, it was, I believe a part of it, as far as the housing market part of it, a lot of that was based on people being taken advantage of as far as those loans. I mean, you got these big banks, Wells Fargo and everybody else. Hell, now even still under investigation for predatory lending. Hell, Fannie Mae, everybody.
Right. Right, and that's what I said. When we say 2017, it's still going on. Like, it never stops. This whole process of exploitation is, this is, we are the consumers to consume stuff for them to live the life they live. They can't do it without us. So they're always going to, right, so they're not going to teach you how to get from out from under them.
So then what do we do? We have to get ourselves through, and that's part of
that revolution,
what I was saying earlier.
Within yourself. Right.
Exactly. Yeah, see, but once you get yourself straight, and believe me, I know it's annoying as hell, you do, you know, at some point, I mean, somebody, you do have to, you know, it might take a while to get them along, but you do have to, you know, pull somebody in and pull somebody up, because, like you said, they're not going to, you know, why would they? Why would they? Their wealth is based on being able to take advantage of us. You know, and that's another reason why I say this whole, I hate to hear the whole oppressor thing and post-traumatic slave syndrome, which I know these things I keep saying do exist. But at the same time, if you don't make a conscious decision to, like, learn this stuff, you go buy a house and you trust what this guy's saying because he's in a suit and, you know, he must have been doing this for a while, that's your fault. That's not nobody oppressing you. That's not post-traumatic slave syndrome, because you had a chance, or you could have made a choice to learn this stuff before you signed them papers. So again, why, like you said, why would they teach us anything when their, you know, their wealth is based on that? We spend over $1 trillion, and we own nothing in our neighborhoods. We don't own the stores where we buy, where we buy shit paper, we don't own it. We don't own the gas stations. We don't own in Florida when Irma came through. It was an Indian guy selling cases in a black neighborhood, selling cases of water for $40.
For 12 or 24 waters.
He's selling for $40.
Right. And now there's nothing wrong with him selling for $40. What's wrong with you actually paying $40? Because what are you going to do if I'm coming to get my water. You need water too? Yeah, we're going to go get some water. We're about to take this water. We're about to put down what the water costs, and we're leaving.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You could charge what you want to charge, but this is what I'm paying. I'm not going to steal it. But if a case of water costs $3.99, that's what I'm leaving there. I might leave a $5 bill, and that's going to be my extra. You know what I mean? I'm not going to really wait for you to give me change because I'm taking the water and this is what I'm leaving. Now, you can sell the water. Yeah.
Here in Jersey, Sandy, when Sandy happened, it was, you know, all the gas stations that were on the news for price gouging. They were all in urban areas.
This is the example of the revolution, as you know, as a whole, like individuals, and it's contagious. When I'm at the gas pump, we know the gas is supposed to be this amount. All of a sudden, it's high as I don't know what. You pump the gas, I'm watching you pay for your gas because you pay for it after you pump it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you pump the gas. The gas price where I normally fill up cost me $25. You got it at $75. You taking this $25 and watch the next person be like, oh, I'm doing the same thing. Because what happens is when we move as one unit, you can't stop it. You just have to accept
it.
But belong to the individuals, that's what they can exploit, us being individuals.
Yeah.
That $40 gallon case of water.
How do the people that spend over $1 trillion have no power? Right now, you couldn't. One thing, okay, with back in 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, I always say I think I should have been born then because that's where the true fight was. You know, like people, you know, we as a people, we stuck together. You know, all kinds of stuff like that. You know, but right now, you can't get 20 people to say they ain't shopping at Walmart, Target, spending money places where it's not black owned. Now, I'm going to get on that in a second, too. You can't get too many people to say, especially around, like every year for
Thanksgiving, Black Friday.
That's right. That's what we really be trying to get people to do it. And, man, listen, they be out there fighting in them lines 3 o'clock in the morning. And do you know that Walmart, and I know this because I used to work at Walmart, is actually in the red all year long. Walmart loses money year long. Exactly. When them holidays and all that stuff come along, Walmart is in, oh my God, they're in the black like you wouldn't believe. But they lose money all year long. And Walmart is actually, BJ's.
I think it's Sam's
Toys
Club.
Sam's Club. Kids R Us, Toys R Us, all that. That is all actually owned by Walmart. All of it. Yeah, like even like TJ Maxx and stores like that, that's actually all owned by the same corporation.
Right.
Yeah, that's all owned. All those stores like that are all. And the crazy thing is, all the money that we spend in them, we don't own none of it. And
none of it.
Not only that, if you notice, all of those stores Good.
Are you familiar with Dr. Claude Anderson?
No.
He talks about that whole process of financial literacy and how because we're so individualized, our money don't have the power it's supposed to have because we don't pull it together and go make a move with it. You know what I mean? We walk in as an individual. We drop, and it accumulates in one bucket in the coffers of Walmart, and there's $1 trillion. But if we would have took just half, shit, a quarter of that, and pulled it in one bunch, we can buy our own store and put our own stuff in it.
But I think they call it like basically co-ops.
It's
hard to get a bunch of us together to do that, though. It's hard now.
It's this process we got to go through. And what they say, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day. So that we're going through this process that we have to get, you know what I mean, this thing of solidarity and figure out how we can move as one in our best interest. So
true.
It's the process. Now, we just got to respect the process.
Let me touch on this black-owned businesses.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to lie. That's some of the most difficult businesses I've ever dealt with is black businesses.
Oh, yeah.
From a couple sides, though. One side being
that
you go downtown Newark or to these malls or whatever, and you'll spend $200 on a pair of Jordans.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have a small store, 20,000 square feet or so or whatever, and you'll come in my store and them same $200 sneakers, you want them for $160. When you went in the other stores, you didn't try and get a discount. And, hell, you might even bought two pairs, still ain't as could you get a discount.
Mm-hmm.
But you come in my store and you want a discount. And, you know, everybody says spend black, buy black and all that. And it makes sense. But this is one of the things that we do to each other. Now also on that, from the other side, I've been to some black owned businesses that I will never in my life go to again. Just based on the poor attitude, the unprofessional, it's hard for some of us to make the transition. And from, you know, just a regular life of working or street life or whatever and into that business world. And we treat each other bad, man. We do. There was a video on Facebook. Mute your phone until you're about to talk.
Okay.
There's a video on Facebook in Irvington, New Jersey. There's a soul food restaurant. And they went off in this store, man. The owner went off on a customer. Well, he didn't know she was actually somebody. And he was just, like, very rude. And to a black woman at that, very rude, very nasty, disrespectful. Like, just cursed her out, like, you know, like he was talking to a dog. And these are some of, like, stuff like that is what, you know, happens when, you know, we go into, you know, some of these black businesses. We just don't know how to be professional or deal with having a business. Same thing. Soul food restaurant, you go in there, you get a breast, a leg, a spoonful of mac and cheese, a spoonful of collard greens or whatever, and it's like $13 to $18. When you can go to Manny's on Freelandheisen Avenue in Newark and get three times the food and a drink for $8. Right? I don't understand that. That's a problem for me. First off, we already have everybody in our communities that own everything. And we come in and still take advantage of each other. That's crazy. Do you see, you, you Do you see what I'm talking about? I'm sure you see, you know, the same things all the time.
Yeah, and there's some validity which you're saying where some people do crazy stuff, but I think it's more common that access to capital.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that the Standish Brothers do, they have co-ops. I learned that a lot of those bodegas, corner stores, are a group. So they buy in bulk.
Mm-hmm.
So they get discounts. Then they can turn around and set the price ways a little cheaper. Most of us, from my experience, I can't say all, but my experience, we're all individual stores. And we're trying to survive as individuals. And we can't be cost effective buying by myself opposed to buying with three other restaurants, pooling our money together,
then,
buying in bulk.
Once again, that's where before you open that soul food restaurant, those are the things that you need to learn and find out before you do that so you don't have to. How many soul food restaurants have you seen open for 20 years? Like, Manny's has been in the same spot for how many years? Manny's has been there forever, the same owner. They've been there forever. And I don't see them going anywhere anytime soon. So, like, but most soul food restaurants, they don't last. And like I said, that's something that maybe you need to, you know, you need to research before you open these businesses. You need to see, you know, see a lot of them stores, you can't even go in there and ask them, hey, what's your food cost?
Exactly.
Because they have no idea. What's your waste? They have no idea. And these are the things that we don't know and we need to learn before we open these businesses so we don't have to worry about, you know, stuff like that and, you know, our business closing and, you know, because, you know, we, not because we didn't know, because we just didn't know what to do and what was going on because we did no research. We just figured, hey, I can cook, I'm going to open the store.
Right.
We didn't think about
it. I got friends, they're going to support me.
Now, let me tell you something. those friends, yeah, those are the ones you're going to see in there the least. The friends, the family, everybody. Those are the ones you're going to see in there the least. Now, in some cases, there's very good reasons for that. But, like, you know, if I have a soul food restaurant and I can cook and I have reasonable prices, then, yeah, I expect, you know, everybody to be in there. But, you know, if I have some problems or whatever, then, like, yeah, I can understand why they don't. But we need to learn financial literacy. We need to learn togetherness. We need to learn how to be together and not be worried about I'm gonna get more than you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hold on one second.
Now, and while he's on hold, now let me say, mute your phone. Carl, mute your phone. Now, I got to bring up the fact, okay, as far as us in black business, I work in the construction field. And one big, huge problem with us with businesses, we, like, so, okay, in the construction field, let me speak on that. A lot of us, we can do the work, and we can do the work better than anybody. Because first of all, we have to. If we do electric, we have to do it better than the white company. If we do building, we have to do it better. If we do plumbing, we have to do it better. Because we're looked at and we're the ones looked at and judged. So whatever we do, we have to do it better. All right. My problem is we can do the work, and again, once again, people, we did not learn the business, and that is a huge, huge problem. Right now, I run a multi-million-dollar job, and I have contractors on that job. I mean, I have an electrician that, man, believe me when I tell you, nobody's going to do the work that this man does. oh, he irks my nerves. Paperwork in to get paid on time is basically you submit your invoices to the office. They have a process, okay, that paperwork has to go through. That you submit your paperwork, they process it, you get your check in 2 weeks, okay? This man annoys the hell out of me. He will not do the paperwork correct, or he will not do it on time, and then he comes to me and he cries, oh, your people not paying me, oh, they got me in the chokehold, this and that. No, it's not that. It's the fact that you didn't do what you had to do, or you won't, like a lot of small black business, we won't pay someone to do what we need done because we want to pay them $400 or $500 when they deserve $1,000 a week. But we don't want to pay that because we're thinking about the $1,000 a week. But what you need to be thinking about is what you're going to get out of paying that $1,000 a week because it's very, very important. It's very, very important to know that business end of whatever business that you have. Same thing. I had a plumber, same thing. This guy had probably made $400,000 on the job, but it was always a fight getting him to get his paperwork in. Now, me personally, you will never have to chase me down to send me a $60,000-$70,000 check. Are you kidding me? I'm going to do what I have to do to get it in. And if I can't do it or it's going to take me longer to do it, guess what? I'm going to hire somebody that can do it. That's just me. I don't know. Bottom line, we have to do better. We cannot act like post-traumatic slave syndrome and oppression does not happen. We can't act like that, but we cannot act like that is the begin-all and end-all of us.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what us coming together and these conversations me and you having in the radio show and sparking this stuff to come together so we could get better at what we're trying to do. We have to start somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody starts at the top. But we got to be the same way we expect people to give us a chance. We got to put us a real honest effort and making sure we educating ourselves and what we're trying to do so we can provide a better service to the people who are trying to give us a chance.
Like what you just said as far as I have, okay, black contractors and like in the construction business, like one of the biggest things I always said, like I said, anything that we do, this plumbing, electric, building, HVAC, anything that we do, hell, if we sweep streets for a living, guess what? We got to sweep streets better than any white man walking because we're the ones being looked at. All right? But like I said, you got to know that business end of it. We have to. If we don't, we will never get anywhere. There is no way in the world that, I got off topic, but what they always say to black contractors is, oh, man, don't nobody want to give us, get a black guys the big jobs. Like, we go and we bid on them, and a lot of them we don't get. But what they never look at is, you probably ain't get that job because it took you 3 weeks. It took you 3 weeks to give a quote. Okay, the quote you gave was $40,000 over what it should cost because we don't have a bidder. We don't want to pay somebody. They have a position called the construction bidder, somebody that bids the jobs, and we don't want to pay for that person because, believe me, that guy makes money. Believe me.
Right.
He's making... Yeah, the money he's making is not far from the guy doing the jobs.
Right, and that's part of that access to capital. Well, we will have to, since we're not looking for them to give us a loan, access to capital, if we're spending $1 trillion, we have the money.
Exactly.
We just need to come together so we can actually, provide the money to hire that guy while at the same time training a young brother to take his job once he gets there. We'll hire you temporarily to do the bidding for us, but we're going to train this guy over here. So 20 years from now, your family's not going to be eating off us. Our family be eating off us. So temporarily, you
exactly.
have these jobs for us. We hire you for it. We thank you for your services, but we no longer need you because we're going to train our own to do this everything that we're hiring you to do.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But it's just different things that we do. Like, I had a plumber there where he was charging $150 an hour per man. And this is $150 per hour. There was days he had 10 guys on the job. Now, he's $150 an hour per man. But he was only paying the guys $150 a day.
Day.
And then, yes. Just for himself, just for himself, what he charged for himself, he made $1,600 a day just for what he charged for himself as the master plumber. All right? But he wouldn't pay these guys the overtime. So what happened? They stopped doing overtime. What happened with me? Put my job behind. But we don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, see, you know, they don't care about that. It's, oh, I'm going to get the money. But you got to be professional about it. If you're being paid the overtime, pay your guys. Because if you're doing that kind of a big job like that, you have to think about the guy who hired you to do it. He has deadlines for those jobs. So, again, that goes to knowing the business and doing the job right. Bottom line. We can't, and I said I'm going to stop saying, I'm sorry to say this, but it's something I definitely want everybody to hear. There is definitely a difference between niggas and black folks.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. Because I have run into
And one of the things is niggas are niggas. There is no prototype nigga. Your actions make you a nigga.
Exactly. Nigga does not define race. Because I know plenty of white niggas, Spanish niggas.
Exactly. When you got this industry of niggas who, like, what was the example of the guy who, the EpiPen? It was some type of medication that was needed. And the price was basically like $15 per prescription, something like that, per whatever the pen was that you needed. And he marked it up 700%, or was it 1,500%? Some outrageous percentage, crazy, greed. That's a nigga.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But he only did it because that's standard. I remember a line that I take a lot of hip-hop quotes and put it in some of the stuff points I'm trying to make. Jay-Z had a line that said, you say my name on record, it's going to cost you 700%. Now, I come to find out that 700% is standard business practice.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? And we, in the neighborhood, when we sell something, we mark it up. If we marked it up 100%, you know what I mean? We feeling like, damn, I would be glad to spend $20 and get 40 back out of it. You know what I mean? And sell it for 40, which is great.
Well, yeah, See, but at the same time, like it's standard. 700% is standard, but you don't have to do 700%.
But that's a whole lot of niggas in the industry that we are actually civilized compared to them. When we charge, we pass up for $20 and sell it for $40. What they say about a pair of Jordans costs about $15 to $20 to make a pair of Jordans, but they sell it for $2.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's nigga.
Man, listen. I used to sell lingerie out of my car that paid for my movies and everything. But man, let me tell you something. And I promise you I had the same exact stuff they had in Victoria's Secret and all that type of stuff. Man, I was over there in New York paying $26 a dozen. Man, I sold I could have sold the same thing. I sold them things $3 a piece and man, let me tell you, I made a killer, boy.
Right, that's an example of niggas. You doing the same thing and niggas is charging motherfucking $30 for a lace top that you charging $15 for, $12 for.
Exactly.
Or even 10.
Exactly.
You know
what I mean?
You
gotta be smart, man. You gotta be smart. All right, look, we down to 10 seconds. If you are listening online or on the phone, the conversation, you can still go on, but I'm going to go ahead and cut it. But this is Ray at Powerful Thinking. Our email is powerfulthinking1@gmail.com. You can any questions or topics you'd like to hear, you can always call it. You can always email us, and we will promote your shop or whatever it is that you have online. Carl, where's your shop at?
The mechanic shop for service, oil changes, suspension work, pretty much anything. It's 430 Bloy Street in Hillside. The shop is called Diamond Shug Auto Service. And the car lot, if you want to purchase a car, it's at 290 Lyons Avenue in Newark. With Keep Affordable Cars, I can find anything you want, but if you're in the $2,000 market range, I got multiple cars in that price range, you know, reliable, just to get you from point A to point B to get it going until you build yourself up. And, you know, and go ahead and get something that you like, but you got to start from somewhere, and I'll try to help you with the starter kit. Mm-hmm.
Good. And now let's not forget about the wife.
Yes.
Okay. Honestly, like, okay, people, I know Carl. And Carl has, like, an amazing wife. Let me tell you, this woman is a hustler. This woman will sell water to a well. She is good at what she does, and she's very helpful. What's her foundation?
A Day at a Time. It's a nonprofit that she has, and it's one of the things that they were able to do this summer was send, I think, 8 girls to summer camp for, what was it called? Young Entrepreneurs Achieving Real Success was the acronym. And they actually won an award for the best documentary for their age group at the North Film Festival.
Okay, good. And she takes donations. Where can they go online, or what's her website, or to make a donation?
Yes, you can go to, you can follow at iamlunic.com, her website. She's on, or you can go to adayatatimenj.org, and that is literally a day at a time, nj.org. I hear people say stuff, and they run it so fast. You know, when you're online, you got to be precise if you want to get to that exact location.
Yeah. And she also has, you hear all the stuff this woman does, I'm telling you, she's all right. What's her radio show? Level Up?
Level Up Talk Radio. And they may have finished for the season, and maybe one more show left. It's on Mondays at 7:30. You can catch her on Facebook at I Am Lunic. It's the her Facebook page, IAM Lunic, and 7:30 Mondays is Level Up Talk Radio, and it's about us leveling up, having this conversation that like we had today, and not just talking about it, but trying to come up with some ideas of how we're gonna move forward, and highlighting people that's actually doing it, because if we don't highlight them, they might not get highlighted waiting for somebody else to do it, and that's part of
the
radio is bringing people on.
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons why I started this whole thing. It was the idea behind it was, you know, if we don't highlight the positive things that we do, no one else is. Because, I mean, right now, I mean, I don't have a nationally syndicated radio show, this, that, the other, but what I can tell you right now is what you know, the people listening don't know. Y'all talking to an ex-car thief, ex-drug dealer, and some of everything else. You know, and my life is just, like, so different now, which, again, is why I always say that you cannot tell me you cannot make choices, or we don't have a choice in, you know, what we do, that we have to be that drug dealer the rest of your life. Hell, Jay-Z used to be one of the biggest drug dealers around, and right now this dude about to be a billionaire. You know, not from selling drugs, but from doing things that nobody ever expected from him. You know, everybody thought that he was going to be a drug dealer the rest of his life. He was going, like they say, what is it, jail, the hospital, or the morgue. that's what everybody expected of him and a whole lot of other people. And I know that it was expected of me because, hell, I wasn't even, I'm probably 14, and I had teachers in school telling me I wasn't going to make it until I was 18. Well, one of the security guards in particular. And you better mm-hmm. believe on my 18th birthday, man, I wasn't living in that area no more. I went straight to that man on my 18th birthday and let him know that I was 18 that day because he said I wasn't going to make it. And that was an influential, at that time, black man, which was the last mm-hmm. thing that man should have ever told me. You know, but at the same time, that could have made me want to make it to 18. You know, but either right. way, like, yeah, that's not how you teach something. But, all right, so we're going to end the show there. Carl, thank you for calling in. Everybody that called in, I did miss about 4 calls. I'm sorry, y'all. Next week we'll be back on Wednesday, and I will definitely try to get to everyone on that date. Again, like I said, if you have any ideas or topics that you'd like discussed on the show, powerthinking1@gmail.com. All right, everybody, good night. Thanks for calling in, Carl.
All right, no problem.
Look at that sandy ass.